Today's episode of The Beat is brought to you by the Waterworks and Header HVAC, now together to serve you better, and proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics. Somehow, Memorial Day weekend is upon us. It is a wonderful holiday weekend, Freaky Friday on The Beat, presented by the Waterworks. He is Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward, and I don't want to jinx it. Just feels like time's going fast.
It's going by really fast. The month of May is approaching its end. We are getting into recruiting season. There's so many exciting things. You're getting to travel back to the great state of Texas to do some early advanced scouting on the Longhorns for September 12th.
Which I'm not going to do that.
Oh.
I am going to fly into Austin, though.
Okay. Well, whatever you're doing there, you're going to enjoy it. It should be a great weekend around the Midwest. Weather-wise, it's not going to be hot. It's not going to be rainy, I don't think, like a whole much. But we're going to just do the best we can to continue to get through May, to get to June, to get to July, to get to August, and then football season.
It doesn't sound as daunting to me as I thought it was going to be at the end of spring camp and the start of May.
No, because what you realize is that as you get old, life flashes before your eyes every single day.
Oh.
And so it goes by really quick, and here we go.
Well, I think it also did help that we've done a couple different unique interviews. We took the trip down to Tampa to see Brian Hartline and talk with KJ Hill. You know, that kept things moving. It gave us a little bit of a different spin on things in May. On Tuesday on The Beat, you will see Kevin Reese with a little bit of hybrid interview and notebook in the equipment room and looking at the jerseys, which I'm very excited about for you all to see that. Hopefully it turned out all right.
It turned out really well. Excited for people to see it. It actually turned out better than I would have hoped. It was so much more insightful than I would have hoped. I some of the things that were not talked about on the actual interview are things I'm most interested in.
Well, come on now.
But
we can't talk
about that right now. But there's a lot of cool things, and learning about that process and what Ohio State has to go through to get even just
a jersey
ordered is pretty insane. I'm excited for people to see that on Tuesday.
All right, so that'll be Tuesday. You can also
we'll be surprised dropping that next Tuesday at 5 a.m.
We'll be surprise release. So check out that. Hopefully you enjoy it as much as we enjoyed going into EQ and getting some of that insight from Kevin Reese. We will preview on Wednesday of next week, official visit weekend. That's the plan right now. If you have other things that you want us to get into, like we did on Thursday with a little this or that, as you called it, Berm, send those questions. And if you want to get ready for next Friday's Freaky Friday mailbag, you're always welcome to do that at the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com. That is the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com, which Ryan did to get us started on this week's edition with official visit season about to ramp up. It got me thinking back to all the roster construction discussions during portal season a couple months ago. Is there anything we can glean from the staff's current recruiting strategy from a bigger picture standpoint? It feels like, Berm, they're recruiting fewer long-term developmental prospects than in the past and leaning more toward players who can realistically contribute earlier. Do you think that's an intentional philosophical shift tied to the portal NIL era and only investing in the top 50 to 75% of your class, or just a coincidence based on this particular cycle? A lot to get into there.
Yeah, I don't think anything Ohio State does is a coincidence. I think that makes perfect sense how it's being described here, which is, yeah, Ohio State, what is the point in this era of recruiting players that are going to need 4 to 5 years to develop when nobody stays for 4 to 5 years? Even the local kids from Ohio that you think, hey, Bodpen Miller, prime example, right? He's a kid from Ohio, did not play wide receiver in high school, had a couple camps with Brian Hartline, learned how to play receiver for 1 year at Ohio State, and is gone, and is now at the University of Washington. Like, there is no real value in that. We've posited that we think the bottom third of the roster will basically refresh every single year, and those are the developmental players. So right now, what you're recruiting is elite players that you know can play early, and you're recruiting college players who are
immediately ready to play,
and are going to cut their teeth somewhere else. And so Ohio State will still hold tight to the developed here mantra, but what they're developing now has to be first-round picks, and it's not about the rest of the roster. And I think that's a little bit discouraging, especially for kids around the state of Ohio that are still going to come out to camps in these next couple weeks and try to earn an offer as heading into your senior year. Like, you should do that. But yeah, the entire game has changed. And Mark Pantone dove into that with us back in August. And, you know, Ohio State's philosophy is shifting daily, it seems. I mean, it
has to.
You can't just assume that every cycle is going to be the same. You can't. It seems like, and we can talk about it in this specific 2027 recruiting cycle, it does seem pretty intentional for Ohio State that they are willing to spend a little bit more money in the trenches. That's something that is vital, and I think that that is a byproduct of seeing the way that the last two games of last year went, but also just looking at the roster and saying, hey, we are kind
of... Where do you have to spend in this cycle? Right. Like, it's clearly there.
It's defensive line, offensive line. It's running back because you didn't go out and get a big fish last year. So it is interesting to see the little bit of the game playing that Ohio State has to do within its own roster. But if, for example, last year, you know, this time of the year, the only people talking about Arvell Reese leaving early were like me, right?
Again?
So, I know, but like once the season starts, and then all of a sudden, the coaches are like, wait a second.
Yeah.
This changes now. So then you have to adjust. There's always going to be adjustments, but they definitely don't need to recruit and develop players that are going to not play at Ohio State.
But that will also still happen.
Mm-hmm. Occasionally.
I'm thinking, now correct me if I'm way off base on this. You are the expert. What about a recruitment like Nick Lauder? That I think the like long-term development players, Ohio State is willing to maybe wait until later in the cycle or even getting senior tape. If that's not a good example.
No. Lauder's a good example of that, but he was committed to Louisville for months. It's not like he was a diamond in the rough. He wasn't someone, and he plays a developmental position. Like that is, we can comfortably say, like Ohio State is never, okay, not likely. I guess I should never say never.
Okay.
Ohio State is very unlikely to ever pay big dollars to a high school tight end at a position that they know and they've seen over the last 5 years, like the best path for Ohio State is to have big freaky athletes who maybe turn into tight ends like Cade Stover, or you just go get them out of the transfer portal like Will Kazmarek and guys like that. Like that is,
I mean, they've taken four transfer portal tight ends in the last three cycles.
Right. So. And you've the recruitment of Nate Roberts is going to be an anomaly. And Ohio State, that is a philosophy that I don't see changing anytime soon. So a guy like Nick Lauder is a good choice for that. Now, there are other circumstances, guys like Landry Breed, who, again, he was committed to NC State. It's not like he was committed to a nobody school. Mason Wilhelm, whose father played at Ohio State, was committed to North Carolina. So they're going to find those guys, but it's there's always going to be an Ohio tie. There's going to be something that gives you confidence that that player is going to be willing to stick around. Lauder comes from a military background, a very developmental position, like just a grinder. He's just a dude who's going to go out and work. They know that from because they did a years-long evaluation on it.
I guess my point was in January when we were talking about the shift and it and we were saying, well, Ohio State's going to pay 10 to 15 guys in the signing class because mm-hmm. those are the ones that you feel like you might be able to get an immediate return on that investment, or you could sign them to two-year deals. You know, I haven't seen them all. Either one or both of those things could apply. But that doesn't mean, and you have stressed this over the last couple of months, that the class is going to be, you know, shrinking
right.
lower than 25. A lot of those guys that want the opportunity and are not going to be requiring massive upfront NIL payments really from any program, but are at least in the conversation that Ohio State thinks they could develop them over the long term, it behooves them to take as many of those guys as they can, which will be why camp season is important and also why some players who have senior film that may change the conversation from the junior year, I think there will be room for them on this roster.
But there's also a piece of that where it's in Ohio State's best interest to not go after those players now.
Sure.
Because if you go after those players now, then NC State and North Carolina and these other schools who are a rung or two below Ohio State then say, oh, well, we can flip that Ohio State commitment. So by offering him
anything. Yeah.
And so it makes a lot more sense for players like Landry Breed, Mason Wilhelm, et cetera, to wait until middle part of their senior year and then say, hey, you know what? You've shown us what you can do. You're an Ohio kid. You've got ties. If you do that now, all you're doing is raising the market value for those players, which is crazy that we have to say, but that doesn't really work in Ohio State's favor. So you, as we saw with like Jacob Weatherspoon last year, who was the first commitment in the class of 2026 and flipped to North Carolina in the middle of the summer when nobody knew he was even talking to anybody else. So that's because Ohio State's saying, well, we have our eyes on Jordan Thomas and Jay Timmons, and we have these other ideas, and the Buckeyes weren't going to pay Jacob Weatherspoon what North Carolina would. So if the Buckeyes had waited on Weatherspoon and given him a little bit of opportunity to develop, I think it might have looked different.
Yeah. A lot of encouraging things said, by the way, about Mason Wilhelm by multiple people throughout spring camp. So there's going to be room for that always. Thanks for that question, Ryan. This came from Zach. Where do you think Ryan Day ranks among Ohio State head coaches all time? And can you list your top three Ohio State coaches of all time? I feel like Buckeye fans maybe don't appreciate the fact that we are potentially seeing one of the greatest coaches in Buckeye history right now. Obviously, his resume isn't complete yet, but I think he's probably going to be top three with Woody at two and Urban at one. I don't know how many people are going to co-sign Zach with Woody below Urban Meyer. I don't think I can. I covered the entirety of the Urban Meyer era. I know that he's one of the most influential college football coaches of all time, which should put you on the short list of everywhere you've been. And he is on the short list. I don't think that I can put him ahead of the guy who has the practice facility named after him and the length of that tenure and the how influential it was over the entirety of the sport. Woody is number one, despite the fact that I never watched him coach a game in person, and I watched all of Urban Meyer's era. And I sometimes feel like, and this, I'm not trying to hot take this. Often, I think
I've said. I know if you say what you're going to say, I've said it before. I agree.
At the same time that there has been like denigration of Ryan Day's resume, I think Urban's over the with 8 years in the rearview mirror has occasionally been overinflated.
It's been glazed a little bit because Ohio State won one national championship in a 7 year stretch when they should have won three or four. I've said that before. I think Urban Meyer obviously was incredibly impactful changing the Big Ten.
Yeah, no doubt.
But he was at Ohio State for 7 years. Now, to go to the original point, I completely agree that people don't understand how good Ryan Day has been in this era. But the eras are different. And I was thinking about this on the drive in to the studio. Like, is it harder to win now or easier to win now at Ohio State?
Now that's a more challenging question. I think it was... Now you're really trying to get me in trouble. If you think about the 7-0 record, and that really becomes the hallmark of the Urban Meyer era, mm-hmm. some of it was a product of a historical ebb and a low point in the rivalry. Those first couple wins were not the most challenging that Ohio State was ever going to face in the game. And then the level of play across the Big Ten, with Michigan, I guess, being an example of that, but also the size of it was smaller in the Big Ten, and the competitive level at the very top was also lower. I think if you're, quite frankly, Urban Meyer never had to play a schedule that is as difficult as the one that Ryan Day is facing this year. And there are other seasons where that has been true in the Big Ten as well. Like for as much as the SEC wanted to scoff at it, or it felt at times like Ohio State could just roll its helmet out and go 12-0 in the regular season, you know, that's not really the reality. The Big Ten is as difficult to win in as it has ever been mm-hmm. in history, in my opinion. And so I think it's harder now.
I think it's harder to win now, and that's just not even just conference-wide, but because of NIL, because of resources that other schools have, you can't...
I didn't want to go down that road.
I know, but when you talk about everything that Ryan Day's had to deal with in the last 8 years of his first 8 years as a head coach anywhere... The way that the sport has changed, the way that the conference has changed, the way that money has now taken over recruiting. Like there is, and obviously Ohio State has a lot of money, and Ohio State continues to recruit well and develop well and use the transfer portal well. But I completely agree that people are not giving enough credit to Ryan Day for what he's done. But on the other side of that token, I don't know that I'm ready to put him ahead of Urban Meyer or Jim Tressel or Woody Hayes at this point, especially not Woody, who is the key part that you brought up is the longevity of Woody's career. Like what he did, he redefined Ohio State as an institution and brought the Buckeyes into a prominence that it has been the job of every coach since to maintain, which is sometimes harder, I guess, than building something. Sometimes it's harder to maintain it. But I would not put Urban Meyer ahead of Jim Tressel on the list of Ohio State all-time great coaches.
I mean, he also bent the Big Ten to its will.
I mean,
but it probably wasn't to the benefit of the conference.
It was not to the benefit of the conference. He ruined the Big Ten by choking it out. And then Urban Meyer and his attitude brought it back. We talked about this a few weeks ago. His saying, like, why does the Big Ten have to be big and slow? Why, like, let's change. Why are we respecting each other's commitments and not trying to recruit kids that are committed to other schools in the league? Like, that's stupid. I don't know. Ryan Day's all-time winning percentage is as good as any coach in the history of the sport.
It's pretty good.
He's winning at a clip and at a time
in a world
where it's harder to do than ever. I think that there is a genuine conversation to be had about Ryan's place in the pantheon of Ohio State coaches as it compares to where Urban was. I still would need a little convincing to get him to the point where it's Woody Hayes, Jim Tressel.
Here's what I think. If we're standing here right now, I believe that Woody is number one, Jim Tressel is number two, and I'm not trying to dodge the question. I don't know how you differentiate through 7 years
what they've done,
what Urban Meyer and Ryan Day have done. They are
the
on level
only
footing.
Difference is the record against Michigan,
and that opens up a completely different conversation that we definitely don't need to have right now. But here's what I'll say. When Ryan Day wins a second national championship at Ohio State, it becomes a conversation between him and Woody. And I'm not going to say that I would elevate him past.
Right. Right now it's a depth chart. It's and or for Urban and Ryan in my mind.
Correct. But I think that the X factor, the differentiator, the tiebreaker will be, especially in this era, if Ryan Day wins another one, and I think that he will, he becomes number two with a silver bullet. You know, I mean, they're different eras. It's like having a LeBron or Michael Jordan conversation.
Right. Or a Wilt Chamberlain conversation or Barry Sanders versus Jim Brown. Like, how do you can't really compare Woody to Ryan Day because they don't coach the same sport.
Yeah. Some people coach weight loss.
Some people do. Mandy did. Well, who's your coach at a weight loss? Jen. Are you still in
regular? Oh, yeah. I talked to her. I talked to her on Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, Cinco de Mayo. Nice day to talk to Jen. Awaken180weightloss.com works. That is just the bottom line. It worked for me. I was actually looking at my my weight loss chart on the way here today. I'm like, holy moly. And to when you see it, 254 is what I was weighing in October. 189 today.
That's crazy.
And it's only because Awaken 180 taught me how to better think about food. And it's not hard. It was not a challenge. It was not, oh, I can't eat this. I can't eat this. It was, I'm just going to eat the things I can, and I'm going to learn how to eat better, eat smarter, think better about food. And Awaken 180 definitely works. Awaken180weightloss.com. It'll work for you too. I'm not going to guarantee it, but
we're not allowed to do that.
I strongly support the program.
Yeah. And we have also seen it work for others, not just at 97.1 The Fan and 10 TV, but I have some friends who have done it, and I'm enjoying watching their success and their bodies change. And also watching
the seasons change,
Burn. But
you don't like the weather in Ohio? Wait 2 hours. It'll change.
And you know, sometimes you're going to need the AC in the afternoon. Sometimes you're going to need the heat at night. But comfort just doesn't ever change. So call the Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing for maintenance, installation, and repairs, or visit online at thewaterworks.com. The Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing, they are proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics. Alex has been wondering, he said, has the team gone away from saying that team up north and started embracing just saying Michigan? I noticed Ryan Day recently said Michigan on Greg McElroy's podcast, and Caleb Downs said it on his podcast at one point. It makes me wonder if their mindset shifted from calling them he who must not be named to embracing Voldemort, and that changed the outcome of the game this year. I would say that never saying Michigan has not been emphasized to the level that it was several years ago.
Yeah.
It's sort of more optional and strongly encouraged.
I mean, it's still on all the signs in the building, all the schedules. It still says to team up north.
Yeah, when they updated the 2026 schedule, it does not say Michigan.
When we were in the EQ room on Thursday afternoon or Wednesday afternoon with Kevin Reese, he was talking about different things, and he said up north. Like, yeah. So I don't think it's an intentional thing. I do, for someone like Caleb Downs, I mean, he was not born in the rivalry. He was a hired gun for 2 years.
Come on. Don't do that.
I understand that, like, I say Michigan, and I grew up in the rivalry, and I'm a huge Ohio State fan, admittedly, and so I don't think it is an intentional thing. But I do like the idea of what this question is actually getting to, because at some point you have to name your fear, right?
Yeah.
And to try and
just look it in the eyes
and try to disrespect it by not naming it, I think is a bad idea. And I understand why it's catchy and fun, and it's nice to call him T-ton or, you know, T-ton or whatever, scum, whatever. Like, but at some point when you're not winning that game, you need to just get back to basics, which is we hate Michigan, and we have to identify that, and we have to say, well, we cannot let Michigan continue to beat us like this. So I actually think I agree with the spirit of the question, but I don't think it's been an intentional push from Ryan Day or anybody in the building to say their name.
Yeah, because for the most, like, Mickey Marotti is not doing that. They're not changing team up north periods to Michigan periods. They're not, like, fully embracing it. It's sort of like, hey, if
I mean, there used to be Michigan Monday under Jim Tressel. Okay, so, like, it wasn't called Team Up North Monday. It was Michigan Monday.
And so, but I also, to the point of the question from Alex, like, I don't have any issue if they went full 100% and just got rid of Team Up North and called them that, because I mocked Brady Hoke mercilessly
for calling it Ohio,
because it was so stupid.
Yeah,
because that's directly the state and also the name of another, you know, college team.
Right.
So, and I think that led to a lot of embarrassment for him. So I'm not saying that has happened with Team Up North, because for two decades, if we're taking the big picture and not focused on a couple asterisks and one blip losing streak, which when you zoom out to two decades is what it looks like, you know, the victors and the spoils have actually belonged in Columbus, so they could do whatever they wanted. To your point, yes, they did lose a couple in a row, and they did, I think, have to shift the way they were emphasizing it, not how strongly. There's only one rivalry. They're not calling anybody else that. They're not watering that part down. The joy that we saw in spring on Gold Pants Day from those guys was really special and unlike anything they've had in a while. It's still obviously and will forever mean a lot to them. But I do believe that the way that Ryan Day specifically was thinking and coaching and approaching that game was to his detriment.
Mm-hmm.
And so if once in a while he takes that power away from him, fine. Kudos. It seems like it worked last year. And I bet it's going to work again this year.
I would suggest it may.
All right. Number four comes from Steven. Is it a bad look for a turf that was put in 3 years ago? It was actually put in 4 years ago in 2022 to be replaced. They got 4 seasons of work out of that. You can tell visually last season it looked bad. Hopefully this one looks better and plays better. I could answer it two ways, I suppose. It was already becoming clear that the slit turf was going out of favor. Issues with the NFL. NFLPA did not want to approve it. They were contesting it in those stadiums around the time that Gene Smith and Ohio State were putting it in 2022. So from that vantage point, you can look back and say, maybe a questionable decision. Certainly didn't work. Here's where I would say for the current regime, it's not a bad look. You give them credit for that, or at least I do. The shelf life for that project in 2022, I was told, was, all right, you're going to get 7 or 8 years. That's what you're hoping to get out of this turf. You're not going to have to replace it until then, later in the decade. Whether it was the aesthetics of it, whether there were injury concerns, NFLPA, whatever, Ohio State said, let's pull the plug on this early. Let's find the funds to get this done. Let's put the new turf in now. You know, whether that's got the coconut husks or zip out zip in, zip out end zones, or, you know, yard lines attached to the turf so that you don't have any of the seam showing there. Like, great. That's all a benefit. I think it is. I didn't feel like the new turf was as pink as the previous one. I didn't think that it looked as bad as some people think it did. That's me personally.
Yeah.
Maybe you disagree from standing on it during every single game. I thought it held its color much better than the previous one, where it did look pink and not great. And there was injury concerns at the end of that shelf life in 2021. But so I can see an argument either way. I'd say the current administration deserves credit for correcting an issue that they saw.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a turf guy, but I don't know the shelf life of turf normally. I will say it could be viewed as a bad look for the previous administration and a good look for the current one that is saying, hey, we're not going to allow this to continue. So kudos to Ross Bjork and those guys for getting it done. I don't care that much about turf. Like, if
that's too bad.
I want people to be able to play football and not have crappy injuries that show up because of turf. So right. if that is a byproduct of the turf, and if we were robbed of Jaxon Smith-Njigba in 2022 because of turf, then I'd be pretty pissed off.
But, or cleats.
Well,
you got to get some insight on that on Tuesday. That's a little teaser. That is addressed head on.
I don't think it's a bad look at all for this current Ohio State administration.
All right. Thanks to Steven. We did get a bonus question. How about some golf turf? Will you?
I like golf turf because that's grass.
Okay. You have to build a golf foursome with yourself included. The parameters for the other three are current Buckeye, former Buckeye, and a PGA or LIV or European World Tour professional. Current Buckeye, former Buckeye.
What is the goal touring of this? What is the goal of this?
That's up to you.
Of this golf
it's your foursome.
Because
do you want to win? Do you want to have a great time?
Right. If I want to win, I'm probably taking Ryan Rudzinski.
Okay.
Okay. If I want to have a great time, I'm probably taking Edric Houston. If I want to have a little bit of both.
How have we not asked Edric Houston if he plays golf yet?
I just don't think he does. I don't see his frame doing.
Did you see Josh Fryer being a great golfer?
No, I didn't anticipate Josh having the stroke that he had.
Toby Wilson.
Well, Toby, I understand. He's his dad and him. I mean, his dad golfs all the time.
Okay. Well, I'll stick with Josh Fryer.
So then. Let me find a middle point there. And this is maybe a completely left field. I bet Julian Sain is a good golfer.
Wasn't he just getting started?
I bet he's a good golfer. Okay. Whether or not he's just getting started, I bet he'll pick it up quickly.
Okay.
Just like Emeka did or Lincoln did or any of these kids, because they're just freaky athletes. And I want to know, I want an opportunity to get to see the real Julian Sain.
That's a good point.
Okay, so I'm going to pick Julian Sain because I want to see him in a relaxed environment where he's just being the California kid and not being put on the spot where there's a bunch of cameras and all of this focus and pressure and all that stuff. So give me Julian Sain as my current player.
Okay.
Former player. I'd like to play with Emeka Buka again because I think...
Come on, man.
He's incredible.
That's not fair.
So give me Julian, give me Emeka, and I don't want to out myself here, but I don't know any current golfer. I mean, I give me Rory McIlroy, I guess, because he's the best golfer in the world.
Apparently he does know one.
Or Scotty Scheffler. Give me one of those two, because I do want to win, but I also want to be impressed by people. And Scotty Scheffler, I think, is pretty dang impressive.
You think he is?
Yeah, I mean, I think. I don't know. He's the best player in the world, right? I know like two golfers. Or I also know like Shahith Tagala or something, because I think his name's funny.
Sahith,
whatever.
It's one of my favorites.
But yeah, there's a lot of guys that I would like to get out there and hit the ball around with. But Emeka, I'm telling you, when we did that episode of Buck 9 with him at the fairway, that is like... You walk in, you're like, oh, he's probably going to be okay at this. And then he's like a professional golfer at 21 years old, and he's played the game for a year, and he's hitting the ball 400 yards with 190 club head speed or ball speed. And you're like, what the am I watching? How does this happen?
He's pretty ridiculous. If you're looking to win, from the former Buckeyes that we have got to know and what we know about their golf games, you're only two options for victory are a Mecha Ibuka or Lincoln Keenholz. Mm-hmm. So if you're playing with a Mecha and I'm trying to beat your team, then I'm going to bring Lincoln Keenholz back, because even though he is still a current college football player, he is a former Buckeye.
That's true. You win.
So I will take Lincoln Keenholz. I need us to get to camp season.
Yeah.
So that I can find out who's playing a lot of golf. Outside, did you take Ryan Rudzinski?
No,
I'm
taking Julian Sane.
Okay, because I know that he's the best current golfer on the team. So I'll take that because I want to win. And then I would like to, I need a professional who will have a good time. And I don't know that Rudzinski and Keenholz, who are also like
pretty serious kids
and regular golf
and
buddies,
super
as well.
Competitive.
So, you know, I'll need someone who wants to play high-level golf and also take some of the pressure away and maybe have, you know, a Rhodes soda or two
a
or
bevy.
More.
Yeah.
So Shane Lowry, Irishman, come on down and let's hoist some pints.
See, I started thinking about this from different perspectives, like Edric Houston, John Daly. Who's the most fun group? Give me those guys and then, like, Toby. You know, that'd be a hell of a good time.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm just trying to think about playing golf with Brian Hartline was also pretty fun, but I don't think that I would want to add him to my team. I think I'm content with what I've got right there. We're going to beat your team.
I just want to see Julian be Julian. That's all.
Yeah. Maybe having somebody else from that quarterback room around him could unlock that as well.
Maybe.
Who knows? All I know is I had a fun time on a Freaky Friday. Thanks to all your questions. You can continue to send those to us at theaustinandbermshow@gmail.com. No show on Monday for Memorial Day. So if you get some time with your friends, family, others, please enjoy it. Do so responsibly. And then come back and see us on Tuesday on the Austin and Berm Show as we talk with Ohio State Director of Football Equipment Services, Kevin Reese, on this show, which is brought to you by the Waterworks. Enjoy the long weekend, folks. He's Berm. I'm Austin. We'll talk to you next week.